Tila paced awkwardly, half stumbling. She still hadn't completely adjusted to the difference between ship's gravity and Earth's gravity. She started to speak, changed her mind, changed it again, and blurted, "Are you scared?"
"Yeah."
"I thought so," she nodded, and resumed pacing. Presently she asked, "Why isn't Speaker scared?" For the Kazin had been nothing but active since the attack, cataloging weaponry, doing primitive trig calculations to plot their course, occasionally delivering concise, reasonable orders in a manner to command instant obedience.
"I think Speaker's terrified. Remember how he acted when he saw the puppeteer worlds? He's terrified, but he won't let Nessus know it."
She shook her head. "I don't understand. I don't. Why is everyone frightened but me?" Love and pity tore at Louis's insides with a pain so old, so nearly forgotten that it was almost new. "I'm new here and everyone knows but me."
"Nessus was half right," he tried to explain. "You've never been hurt at all, have you? You're too lucky to be hurt. We're afraid of being hurt, but you don't understand because it's never happened to you."
"That's crazy. I've never broken a bone or anything, but that's not a psi power."
"No, luck isn't psi. Luck is statistics, and you're a mathematical fluke. Out of 43 billion beings in known space, it would have been surprising if Nessus hadn't found someone like you. Don't you see what he did?"
"He took the group of people who were descendants of winners of the birthright lotteries. He says there were thousands, but it's a good bet that if he hadn't found what he was after in those thousands, he would have started looking through the larger group of people with one or more ancestors born through the lotteries. That gives him tens of millions of choices."
"What was he after?"
"You. He took his several thousand people and started eliminating the unlucky ones. Here a man broke his finger when he was 13. This girl had personality problems. That one had acne. This man gets in fights and loses. That one won a fight but lost the lawsuit. This guy flew model rockets until he burnt a thumbnail off. This girl loses constantly at roulette. You see, you're the girl who's always won. The toast never falls on the buttered side."
Tila was looking thoughtful.
"It's a probability thing, then. But, Louis, I don't always win at roulette."
"But you never lost enough to hurt you."
"No."
"That's what Nessus looked for."
"You're saying I'm some kind of freak."
"No, Tangit, I'm saying you're not.
Nessus kept eliminating candidates who were unlucky until he wound up with you. He thinks he's found some basic principle. All he's really found is the far end of a normal curve. Probability theory says you exist. It also says that the next time you flip a coin, your chances of losing are just as good as mine, 50-50, because Lady Luck has no memory at all."
Tila dropped into a chair.
"A fine good luck charm I turned out to be. Poor Nessus. I failed him."
"Serves him right."
The corners of her mouth twitched.
"We could check it out."
"What?"
"Dial a piece of toast. Start flipping it."
The shadow square was blacker than black, of the expensively achieved definitive black used in high school black body experiments. One corner notched an acute angle into the blue broken line of the ring world. With that notch as a mark, a brain and eye could sketch in the rest of it, a narrow oblong of space blackness, suspiciously void of stars. Already it cut off a good chunk of sky, and it was growing. Louis wore bulbous goggles of a material that developed black spots under the impact of too much vertically impinging light. Polarization in the hull was no longer enough. Speaker, who was in the control room, controlling whatever was left to control, also wore a pair. They had found two separate lenses, each on a short strap, and managed to force them on Nessus. To Louis's goggled eyes, the sun, 12 million miles distant, was a blurred rim of flame around a wide, solid black disk. Everything was hot to the touch. The breathing air plant was a howling wind. Tila opened her cabin door and hastily shut it again. Presently, she reappeared wearing goggles. She joined Louis at the lounge table. The shadow square was a looming absence. It was as if a wet cloth had swept across a blackboard, erasing a swath of chalk-marked stars. The howl of the air plant made speech impossible. How would it dump the heat, out here where the sun was a looming furnace? It couldn't, Louis decided. It must be storing the heat,
Somewhere in the breathing air circuit was a point as hot as a star, growing hotter by the second. One more thing to worry about. The black oblong continued to swell. It was the size that made it seem to approach so slowly. The shadow square was as broad as the sun, nearly 1,000,000 miles across, and much longer, 2.5 million miles long. Almost suddenly, it became tremendous. Its edge slid across the sun, and there was darkness. The shadow square covered half the universe. Its borders were indefinite, black on black, terrible to see. Part of the ship glowed white behind the block of cabins. The air plant was radiating waste heat while it had the chance. Louis shrugged and turned back to watch the shadow square. The scream of breathing air stopped. It left a ringing in the ears. "Well," Teela said awkwardly. Speaker came out of the control room.
"A pity the scope screen is no longer connected to anything. There are so many questions it could answer."
"Like what?" Louis half shouted.
"Why are the shadow squares moving at more than orbital velocity? Are they indeed power generators for the ring engineers? What holds them face down to the sun?" "All the questions the Leaf Eater asked could be answered if we had a working scope screen."
"Are we going to hit the sun?"
"Of course not. I told you that, Louis. We will be behind the shadow square for half an hour. Then, an hour later, we will pass between the next shadow square and the sun. If the cabin becomes too hot, we can always activate the stasis field."
The ringing silence closed in. The shadow square was a featureless field of black without boundaries. A human eye can draw no data from pure black. Presently, the sun came out. Again, the cabin was filled with the howl of the air plant. Louis searched the sky ahead until he found another shadow square. He was watching its approach when the lightning struck again. It looked like lightning. It came like lightning without warning. There was a moment of terrible light, white with a violent tinge. The ship lurched. Discontinuity. Lurched, and the light was gone. Louis reached under his goggles with two forefingers to rub dazzled eyes. "What was that?" Teela exclaimed. Louis's vision cleared slowly. He saw that Nessus had exposed a goggled head, that Speaker was at work in one of the lockers, that Teela was staring at him. No, at something behind him. He turned. The sun was a wide black disk, smaller than it had been, outlined in yellow-white flame. It had shrunk considerably during the moment in stasis. The moment must have lasted hours. The scream of the air plant had faded to an irritating whine. Something else burned out there. It was a looping thread of black, very narrow, outlined in violet-white. There seemed to be no endpoints. One end faded into the black patch that hid the sun. The other diminished ahead of the lyre until it was too small to see. The thread was writhing like an injured earthworm.
"We seem to have hit something," Nessus said calmly.
It was as if he had never been away.
"Speaker, you must go outside to investigate. Please don your suit."
"We are in a state of war," the Kazin answered. "I command."
"Excellent. What will you do now?"
The Kazin had sense enough to remain silent. He had nearly finished donning the multiple balloon and heavy backpack which served him as a pressure suit. Obviously, he intended to go out for a look. He went out on one of the fly cycles, a dumbbell-shaped thruster-powered vehicle with an armchair seat in the constriction. They watched him maneuver alongside the writhing thread of black. It had cooled considerably, for the fringe of brightness around the goggle-induced black had dimmed from violet-white through white-white to orange-white. They watched Speaker's dark bulk leave the fly cycle and move about near the heated, writhing wire. They could hear him breathing. Once they heard a startled snarling sound. But he never said a word into the suit phone. He was out there a full half hour while the heated thing darkened to near invisibility. Presently he returned to the lyre. When he entered the lounge, he had their complete and respectful attention.
"It was no thicker than thread," said the Kazin. "You will notice that I hold half a grippy."
He held up the ruined tool for them to see. The grippy had been cut cleanly along a plain surface, and the cut surface polished to mirror brightness.
"When I was close enough to see how thin the thread was, I swung the grippy at it. The thread cut cleanly through the steel. I felt only the slightest of tugs.